So Sri Aurobindo is taking us on the quest of the indeterminable. So the premise within it is that the indeterminable can be known. That's the whole basis. Whole yoga is about that. It cannot be known by the mind. But if it cannot be known by the mind, doesn't mean it can never be known. This is the fundamental error we make always in all our assessment, judgments about God is a very big, we judge God, whereas we don't even know ourselves, but we are quick to judge others, our neighbor, of course, especially. And then we start judging God, not realizing that the mind is a very limited instrument. So the argument of the scientist is, but this is the only instrument. And if we probe purely by the scientific reason, which means we discover and go further, so we end up with space, time and the particles, and this much it will tell us that there is something beyond. But science says I am not interested because there is no way I can know about it. So any honest scientist or any honest rational person will end up with agnosticism. He would say, I don't know. That's the honest answer. Because one doesn't know. It's not possible to know what is beyond space-time, what is it in which it is expanding. So we use words like void, we use words like infinite, just to simply say that, well, I don't know, but well, it's nothing, probably nothing. Probably is a better word, because we don't know whether it's nothing or it's teeming with possibilities. Because an original nothing cannot bring out this kind of a universe, not universe, multiverse. So that means this nothing is simply, we think it's a blank slate, but this blank slate as if contains within it so many possibilities. So it's not, it cannot be just a nothing. It would mean there are limitless possibilities inside it, which are emerging through some power, some fiat, something is happening out there. But scientists say, let me not go into it, because people who have gone into it have been declared mad. The only sane people left on earth are the scientists. Meaning thereby, stay within your limits, then you are sane. The moment you try to cross those limits, then you are declared as, a person fit for the asylum. So the next level of people who inquiry is the philosophical inquiry. Here also it uses the reason. So he goes a little deeper. He looks at this world of wonder and delight and the exact process fitting time and circumstance. If you see this world in a long run, actually it is amazing. Very amazing. I mean, you can almost trace the Russia-Ukraine war, which is being fought, that whether Ukraine should be on with Europe or it should be on Asia, to a war which took place much, much earlier when the Neanderthals and the Cro-Magnons fought precisely around that area. And the Neanderthals were the good guys, apparently, and the Cro-Magnons were much more brutal. If you go back, God knows, millions of years back. And then if you go still further back, so philosopher extends his inquiry and looks deeper, and he sees that that war is being fought within, and so on and so forth. But he mind, even the philosophical mind, stops at a point. And that point it makes systems, schools, it says, well, I cannot go any further. And it builds a philosophical system, philosophical concepts. But God has a sense of humor. You put him in any prison, he will escape from it. That's the original game that Sri Krishna is playing. You put him, you know, people don't realize, he is as a baby, he is born in Kansa's prison and he escapes. He finds ways and means. If Duryodhan really believed this story, he would not have done the audacity of trying to chain him. So he says, when he tries to chain him, he says, you bigger, find a chain which is good enough to tie space and time. See what a beautiful thing it is. That if you can tie space and time, then you think of tying me. It's a very profoundly scientific statement, because you need to. So wherever you put him, he escapes. So how does he escape logic? That's what Sri Aurobindo is reminding us. Well, infinite on one side, but there are so many finites. Everything here is finite. By finite, it means beginning and an end. And a limit. That's what finite is. But what is apparently the source of this finite is infinite. Similarly, on one side, we are told there is absolute. But in this world, there is no absolute. Everything is relative to each other. That's why in India, we have so much about relatives, the most difficult species. And each relative thinks he is absolute. Especially in marriages, every relative becomes that I am the most important person. So he becomes an absolute. There is this urge to be the absolute. But everything is relative. Everything is interconnected to each other. You don't see any absolute anywhere. And yet, there is an absolute truth somewhere out of which all this is. There is some stable ground possibly on which this is expanding. And we have everything which is always in motion. So there are so many paradoxes which appear when we look at creation and put this idea of the immutable and the infinite. Because the question is, how are we going to verify it? And science says evidence based. So how are we going to find the evidence? So now, see, that's where the beauty of yoga, that in India always there has been a lateral thinking. You are thinking on linearly and in India you are having a lateral thinking simultaneously. So the yogis of yore, the seers, the scientists of the spirit, if you want to call it, they realize that, well, mind is limited, senses are limited. So is there a way we can augment the senses and the mind? So how did they start? They started discovering the mind. This is where the whole thing seems to come. All perception is based on my mind. But what is my mind? Let me start exploring. That's how the Kena Upanishad starts. That what sends thought on its errand? Kena Preshitam. So it starts raising the question, what is this mind? So it started exploring. So that's the way of the yoga or the spiritual way. So what happens when we explore the mind? We discover something which we all know. But it sounds very strange when we say it. Mind has its own substance and builds its own forms. Proof. All the thoughts and feelings are the proof. How are thoughts formed? They are not material realities, isn't it? But they are realities. You can't tell me that, you know, your thoughts, I don't see them on paper. How do I believe you are thinking? Just imagine, thoughts have forms. You can actually see them. You can step back and see them. Like this, they come. I mean, see them by that. I mean that in your mind space, in a subjective mind space, they are real. Feelings are real. They are arising like waves, tumults. One may not be able to measure it. So mind creates its own substance, has its own substance, and it builds forms. Of course, through an occult vision, one can see the thought. That's how the mother, of course, could see the thought. She was not waiting. So there is a possibility of knowing the thoughts, and the mother would see the thought. There are so many interesting examples of that, what is known as thought reading. So first discovery is, well, mind is itself a form maker, and it is building forms out of some mental substance. That's the only way we can understand what substance are thoughts made of. Then the next discovery you make is, these thoughts made out of mind substance are not just casual, random, free floaters. They are pressing to manifest. If we look very closely, we will see sometimes strangely, after many years, something happens in our life, as you know, the person who was meditating to get money. After 10 years, Goddess Lakshmi appears. By then, he has forgotten. Somebody has told him, meditate upon Goddess Lakshmi, you'll get money. By the way, that's not a correct concept. Huh? That's the God of wealth is Dhan Kubir. So, she gives another kind of wealth, the inner sampada. So, Goddess Lakshmi appears and he's so happy. He says, you were asking for money. He says, money? What money? Many times in our life, we look back that 10 years back, 20 years back, if we look carefully, a subconscious, now it has become subconscious, passing desire and they materialize. But when they materialize, we say, oh my God, why this has happened? How did it materialize? Why did it materialize? Because by then you have moved on. But these have their own power. So you see, we realize that thoughts have their own power. They are not disconnected with material world. Some way they are trying to organize things. We don't know how. But to start with, scientifically we can observe, they try to organize. Thoughts press towards action. Some may be realizable, some may not be realizable. But all the things that happen when we look back, somewhere passingly something, and then we can catch a trail. It's very interesting because we go to the roots of things. Then we stop blaming others for what's happening in our own life. Then we discover that these thoughts, how are they coming? We say, I think. How do I think? What is the machinery that I stay? Okay, now I'll start thinking. It's just not possible. As the story of Buddha goes, that somebody said, I get very angry. He said, okay, show me, demonstrate. I can't demonstrate like that. I can't demonstrate like that. It's not in my hands. I suddenly get angry. So these thoughts, if we observe closely, we will actually see they are not our own. We appropriate them. And especially when people write books, they are so happy. Ah, my book, my book, my book. Shobindu has written so many, but he would not. And then they want it to be sold. They want to see, where is my book kept in the shelf? Are, this is not your book. They are coming from the universal consciousness. And then we discover that the brain is actually a receiver and transmitter. It receives. That's why in Indian thought we use the word, you know, there are four kinds of thought, four levels of thought. The Paravak, which is the thought of God, the original. And then there is the Pashyanti Vak, the seeing thought. And then there is the Madhyama, when it becomes manifest like, not revelation, but as body of words. And then the Vaikhari, where it is expressing itself. So this is how, and Vedas speak of 9 or 10 layers of thought. So it is coming from the universe. I think it is my own. But it's not my own. We'll see that there are, supposing I say, if it is my own, I should be able to think about any subject, any moment, at any point of time. As an exercise, we can do it. But we'll see how our mind is unable to, hold beyond a little point. It just, of course, we used to play those games, in 1 minute you have to speak on one subject. In 1 minute time is given, yes. And we used to have those competitions. And if you want to be play over smart, so in one of, I used to take part in all this. So I said, okay, they said drain. So the topic was rain. I said, the rain came and it started pouring tup, 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 tup. So, just for fun. So what do you write? Now you see, these are exercises which in school we are taught. So that we can learn to think cogently, learn. So basically thoughts are coming from the universe. And from there, many side lights of yoga come up. For example, be careful of the company you keep. Because they are coming from all around the universe. You go to the market, always go to the market without a purse. It's okay if your friend has a purse. Because you have gone just to go and suddenly you will feel like picking up something. And you never went to buy anything. That's the psychology that Amazon and Flipkart people know. So they brought it to your doorstep. How will you escape, bachu? You don't want to go there, we'll come to you. And empty time, and the mobile, so Amazon, Flipkart, and then you will end up putting in the basket. See, this is all based on this thought psychology, that thoughts are not our own. They are anyways coming from the universal consciousness. Then we come to next level. See, there is that something in us is witnessing the thoughts. That's how we are able to say, if somebody says, what were you thinking? So how do I say that? Well, I was just thinking about it. How? Something in me was, actually you can step back and actually see like this. See my, again in the mind space, that there is a thought crossing like this. So this mental witness, mano mein purush, so much yoga practice people have discovered, and I mean, it's very elementary actually, but they made it as ultimate truth, and you know, watch your thoughts, witness your thoughts. Very basic. It doesn't take you to anything spiritual or very high. It just takes you to the mental witness. To an extent, it helps. Because instead of being caught in the net of thought, we learn to separate ourselves. But it's a mental witness, not the higher spiritual purusha. Now from there, we can discover another thing. I mean, there are discoveries of the yogis. That maybe I can choose which ones I want and which ones I don't want. So the mental being or the mental purusha becomes the sanctioner of the thoughts. I allow certain thoughts, I don't allow certain thoughts. So you see, they started playing this way. But then they started wondering, but where is all this coming from? What is this universe and the universal consciousness? What are the levels of thought? We know different times, morning thoughts are generally so good. Today is the day when I'll do everything. The only night that we have happy thoughts are 31st December, all resolutions. And 1st January it all goes for, you know, next year. But see, thoughts come. And then by the time there is, we can see a circadian rhythm in thoughts. Circadian rhythm. Morning you'll see one kind of thought, night another kind of thoughts. It's so common, I mean, and it's worth observing. If you take a right turn to the right side and sleep, there'll be one kind of thoughts. And if you want to cut that cycle, just change your side. Sometimes it'll be tossing and turning, but generally it will cut that kind of thought, another kind of thought start. It has a neurological basis, but that's not the thing today. So basically, then the yogis observed there is something so vast, enormous in the field of thought. So they started exploring. It's fascinating. And then as they explored, they went through their own discoveries. They discovered that at every level of thought, there is a witness and there is this prakriti, the mental prakriti. Every level they are observing. And then following this trail, they reached, to cut the long story short, some reached the overmind. What is called as the overmind. What did they observe in the overmind? There is something which is completely, absolutely untouched by all that is happening. There is a movement going on in the mental field, in all the fields, and it is untouched, unmoved. The true eternal witness. But it in itself has nothing out of which all this is coming out. That was their discovery. So they used the word nirguna. So the mystery remained unexplained. At the end of the trail, the yogi in the overmind discovered that it's nirguna. But this is so much full of everything. Quality, number, name, form, everything. How can this be the origin of this? So again, we have the same old story. Maya. Inexplicable. Maya is everywhere. That's how it is said. That she fools everyone. Except that reality which is nirguna. And then, others said, how can it be? So they followed another trail. They didn't follow the trail of the mental witness. They followed the trail of go to the source of everything, every quality. So when you go this way, you go to another, you will see everywhere a personal God, a personal deity and the world he creates. It's not Shagun, it's personal deities through which it goes. And then it eventually reaches that point of Sagun Brahma, which is the origin of all things. But this Sagun Brahma also, there is a problem. Because Sagun Brahma is unfolding itself in so many ways. But how is it determining everything? Where it will go? How it will go? Does it have a power to do that? It's like somebody who is filled with all qualities just randomly throwing things. It has the capacity to do it. But there is a power which is arranging all things. So again, Maya comes in there also. So there is the Sagun Brahma and the Nirgun Brahma. And one of the greatest of yogis, Sri Ramakrishna, who did realize this. Otherwise, generally we'll see that yogis fight between the two. Nirgun is the ultimate truth, because if you approach one way, you realize Nirgun. So you say this world, those who are engaged in the world, in worship, all this is, they are trapped by Maya. But those who realize through the Sagun, they say, you people don't know. They are both standing on the same level. Sri Ramakrishna put it very beautifully. He said, if you take a stick and put it from one side to the other, you will see there is nothing, Nirgun. You do it from the other side, it's Sagun. It's not a perfect analogy, but at least it explains that depending on the angle of approach, you discover the ultimate reality either as Nirgun or as Sagun. But again, it doesn't explain. It simply explains Nirgun means immutable. There is something immutable. That's it. Which is not subject to any mutations, void of all qualities, void of everything. But the world is full of all these things. And if you take the Sagun, you can explain this whole creation. But again, there is a deadlock or a stop. Then where is the immutable, which is free from it? So the story stopped there. Yogi said, this is too much. Or the time was not ready. They said, this is good enough, because Nirgun gives you tremendous freedom. Freedom from everything. It gives you freedom from the chain of thoughts, feelings, desire. Done with everything. Done with name and form and quality and everything. You see the description in Savitri of all these aspects. He says, nothing is required beyond it. I am free. That's it. Why should I bother why the world has come, how it has come? Something has happened somewhere. Somebody is responsible probably. And pass it on to Maya. This has been the story so far. So Sri Aurobindo brings in it a new revolution. He says, no. There is a vision of the mother where she sees a train which is climbing, going very high on the summits. And there are some people sitting there, yogis and seekers, and one by one they are stopping at the station. Then at one point, the train stops as if it's the last stop. And everybody gets, one or two people who are left, they get down there. Sri Aurobindo waits for a while, then he says, no, I must go further. Because it doesn't reconcile. That's the problem always. It doesn't reconcile. There are various philosophical ways people have tried to reconcile. I'll not go into that. So he goes still further. And that's where the importance of the supermind. In the supermind, Nirgun and Sagun are not two aspects or two sides of one reality. They are one single reality which can put forth this or that simultaneously. They are not just co-located. Over mind, they are co-located. Here they coexist in a simultaneity. So they are simultaneously present. So on one side, we have the absolute which is free from all relations. On the other side, the absolute which is capable of all relations. And that is the subject of the next chapter. But today we'll focus only on this part, because the methods that were used by the yogis, basically he's implying that purely on the basis of the senses and the mind, rational mind, we cannot go beyond a point. So we have to apply something else. And this is the discovery which empowered India of old. So often people speak of, in India there was science, technology and all these things. And they feel very happy and proud about it, rightly so. But it's not enough to say we had discovered all this. You have to go to the process, how they discovered it. Because they went to the root of all discoveries. That, they use the word, that knowing which all else can be known. They first empowered themselves and then they went into the field of action. This is the whole thing about empowering oneself. Because without empowering, if you go, so often I have used this word in the field of healing. If I have not studied medicine and my heart is feeling very kind and want to rush and help the people, and I say, why should I study medicine? 4.5 plus 3 years of MD, 8.5 years plus internship plus 10 years. And those who want to earn money, in any case, it's a waste. No, they earn a lot of money, okay, doctors. But if you want to serve, you say, why should I waste so much time? Let me go straight away. Then what will happen? You will learn only to bandage and apply ointment and dispense paracetamol. Because you have not understood the principle. You cannot come up with a deeper understanding and dealing. It's the same thing between fixing a fuse and changing the lines, because there is a problem with the wattage that is flowing through. So yogis, they withdraw from the world and to come back to the world with a greater force. That is what is Shurbindo's apparent withdrawal, so that the highest truth can be activated into the world. He didn't want to rush like everybody else. That's what yoga is meant to do. Withdrawal has nothing to do with cutting, isolating. By withdrawal is meant that while living in the world, for instance, the way of the Gita takes us to Nirguna Guni, that state of inner freedom, Jivan Mukti. So whatever path we follow, but basically we have to disengage from the way we are engaged in the world, ignorantly, and then re-engage through a reorientation of everything and new discoveries that we make on the way. So we'll come to page 322. It is only when we follow the yogic process of quieting the mind itself that a profounder result of our self-observation becomes possible. First, that's why in yoga, first thing is learn to quiet the mind. Otherwise, if that's why, you know, doubt, skepticism at every turn. Why this is so? Why this like this? Why is divine doing that? Arey, wait. You've just enrolled yourself in kindergarten. You want to know what is happening at the PhD level. That's a problem. So too active, restless mind cannot take to yoga. It has to start with faith that there is a truth to know. And we all can know it, provided we go through the process. And the first process is quieting the mind. For first we discover that mind is a subtle substance, a general determinate or generic indeterminate, which mental energy, when it operates, throws into forms of particular determinations of itself, thoughts, concepts, percepts, mental sentiments, activities of will and reactions of feeling, but which, when the energy is quiescent, can live either in an inert torpor or in an immobile silence and peace of self-existence. That's what Sri Aurobindo told to Alexandra David Neal. When she came there to meet Sri Aurobindo, she was a Buddhist practitioner, as we all know. She said, I don't know, mind, because Buddhist practice, no, mind had become quiet. She said, I don't know what is happening. So Sri Aurobindo says, yes, sometimes one doesn't know whether one is becoming stupidly quiet or wise. He is quiet, but he is a wise man. Exact words are missing, but that's what the sense was. That there is a phase, and its phase can be very frightening. Mother speaks of giving this silence to someone. Sri Aurobindo gave this silence to someone like this, and he got frightened. What is happening? I can't think, I can't think. Because you are not ready. There is a process. The mother gave the sense of the infinite to another person, to a Japanese. He ran away because he wanted, what is yoga, what can you give? And she could give all this. So he ran away. He said, my God, all my attachment to my country and my country's everything has just dropped off. All percepts, concept drop off, because it is a reality that transcends. Mind is building percepts, concepts, etc. Sentiments, will, attaches itself, and it has its place. Ignorance has its own place. But infinite will shatter all these barriers. One cannot think the usual way, and that's one of the challenges of the evolution, because new creation will not think and act like the normal finite human mind, which likes to think logically and keep a certain order. So the mental order and the mental world is going to collapse. It's already collapsing, and one is finding it difficult that ye new creation ho raha hai ya kya ho raha hai. But that's because the mental order has to go. It's very neat, nice, logical. But there is something greater which is going to take its place. So first thing is to quieten the mind. Somebody said very nicely, and they were coming to Pondicherry, and there are some people I know who want to come to Pondicherry. So this man told his wife, he said, see, you come along, but two things I must tell you. Don't question about anything. Second, don't try to understand anything. Don't try to understand. Understanding will come. It will come much later. One has to engage in yoga. One cannot understand without that. That's mind-blowing understanding. So this is the first discovery. Next, we see that the determinations of our mind do not all proceed from itself. For waves and currents of mental energy enter into it from outside. And this itself can be unnerving. If one opens to the universal consciousness, sometimes seas of thought, that's how Shobhindra uses the term, seas of thought downpour. And they rearrange themselves. You don't have to worry. They will downpour en masse and they will keep on organizing, reorganizing, and at the end you have a totality. Like you see in the life divine. And a human mind which is not wide and supple and plastic, it can break down under the pressure of this thought. There are people who do suffer a breakdown. They are called as the luminous mad. So there is the universal mind. And then it discovered that there are higher planes of consciousness from where superior mind energy brings other kind of thought, which one had not known, and they begin to pour inside like revelations, inspirations, intuitive flashes, lightnings from above. This also they discovered. Higher planes of consciousness from which a superior mind energy works through us or upon us. Finally, we discovered that which observes all this is the mental being supporting the mental substance. So this is the Manome Purusha. And then, of course, if we go further and further, then we see our personal mind. He says, our personal mind seems to be little more than a formation of universal mind, an engine for the reception, modification, propagation of cosmic thought waves, idea currents, will suggestions, waves of feeling, sense suggestion, form suggestions. Has it not happened? Almost everybody would have experienced it, that you are thinking of something. Suddenly either you see that on a something written like that somewhere, or you hear something which you were looking for. And people sometimes even say that, oh, we had this question in the mind and in the talk it got solved. This is not because of any speaker. It's because that's how that higher thought world operates like that. It knows. It takes into account everything. And when it uses the brain, then it automatically takes care of all that. It's not done by any logical mental process like a computer. It just won't work. But this automatic process, as we ascend higher and higher layers of consciousness. So they begin to replace. And then finally we reach the overmind. So overmind consciousness is such a state of principle beyond individual mind. That is where the seat of the universal mind is. This on page 323, last paragraph. Overmind consciousness is such a state or principle beyond individual mind. Because they discovered there is a universal mind from where thoughts are coming. And here again, very interesting discoveries. There is a universal ignorance. And there is a cosmic truth. So universal ignorance, all kinds of thoughts come from all over. But they are not necessarily the thoughts which will lead us upward or higher. They are not necessarily correct. So there is a cosmic ignorance, and some yogis enter into it. And they believe that just because they have entered into a larger state of consciousness, they are entered into truth. But see how Shurvindo literally detects and dissects with the supramental, I can't use the word scalpel or knife, the supramental diamond tip, that there is cosmic truth and there is cosmic ignorance. Overmind is the plane where we have cosmic truth. First time we discover that universal consciousness, universal mind, different layers. But overmind is the place of cosmic truth. So that's where you have the gods who are aware of the truth. There is no ignorance there. And we can take an example of the gods, is a very good example. That there are gods lower down who are powers of their cosmic powers. All the gods are cosmic powers. But sometimes they play at cross purposes with the god of the overmind. One of the stories, of course, many stories like that, say in the Bhagavad Puran, two stories of Shri Krishna. Shri Krishna is, of course, Anandamaya, but he took his station on the overmind for the purpose of the work he had come to do. And we see that Indra cannot understand. So Indra is following the usual thing. You didn't do my ritual, I am going to flood you. And we have that famous story of Kana Girdhari. Till he comes and recognizes that these way beyond me. So even the overmind has both these aspects. Even the gods, they are gods of you know, universal consciousness. Indra has a universal consciousness. He's a Sahasraksh. But he too can. And we have the same story in Kena Upanishad. We have the same story when Krishna and Arjun go to Khandaprastha. All these stories that there is the cosmic truth and there is the cosmic ignorance. And even gods can be susceptible to it. That's why famous mystic Kabir, who is had the experience of the Nirgun side, Nirgun Brahma. He didn't reconcile, but that was his that was the highest most of the people reached. So he says Maya badi thagani, usne to Vishnu Brahma aur Shiv ko bhi thag liya hai. That's how he puts it across. But what Maya is comes in the next chapter, so we'll hold for that moment. Let's not rush into that. Shubindo reconciles all this. So overmind. So as he goes, there is some discoveries which Shobindu speaks, and we can continue, yes, this itself. Here then we might hope to understand something of the original working of things, get some insight into the fundamental movements of cosmic nature. One thing indeed becomes clear. It is self-evident here that both the individual and the cosmic come from a transcendent reality. That's the supermind. He's not putting the word here. And why does he say that? Because even at the overmind, we see that the perplexity continues. On the page 324, last 5-6 lines from below, overmind seems to add to the perplexity, for the overmental view of things allows each possibility to formulate itself in its own independent right and realize its own existence in cognition, in dynamic self-presentation, in substantiating experience. So overmind is the plane from where the supermind releases all the possibilities. Each possibility has its own truth. It allows. But in the unfolding of time, you will see different truths manifesting. We have the story of Perseus the deliverer. So there is a time when tribal group princess. So she is there and they worship Poseidon. And Perseus comes. Perseus is guided by Athena. So now you see, now there is an evolutionary transition from the lower to the time is changing. So overmind has to allow now. Till now, there are worshippers of Athena, worshippers of Poseidon. Then suddenly time changes. So all those who worship Poseidon, which is Rudra, our own storm god and the god of the sea, he lashes back. But ultimately the time cycle has changed and Perseus wins the victory and he releases the princess. Her name is with A. Anyways, so, Andromeda, thank you so much. Yeah, such a lovely name and how could I forget? Yeah, Andromeda. So Andromeda is released. She is tied to the stake. So that's human soul is tied on the stake. On one side it has to now go from the age of Poseidon to the age of Athena. Athena is our Maheshwari, and you know, she has to bring a greater light. And so this is the tussle. So our mind has allowed both. It doesn't say no. It has to allow everything. There is a time. That's why there is a poem of Sri Aurobindo, Rakshasa, in which all the rishis go to pray to Krishna. You know, won't hear this story anywhere. So they go to pray to Krishna that Ravan is ruling and, you know, please do something about him. So Sri Krishna says, what shall I do? He knows the truth. So what is the truth he knows? He says, I am God, aham brahmasmi. It's the truth. You have to allow him to rule. He says, so? He says, but he knows only part truth. He doesn't know tattvamasi, all this is Brahman. So he will fall. When? He says, see, a million years out of Rakshasa, Asura has evolved. You have to allow a million years. Till out of the Asura, man is ready to emerge. And then the scene changes and Ravan is offering sacrifice to Kali. At each level, the Godhead manifests accordingly. On the peak, she is Gauri. Here, she is Kali. So, she manifests. And Ravan says, I want immortality. Is it not allowed? She says, okay, then let me fall. Only to either man or the ape. And that is the symbol that, you know, our mind has allowed. Our mind is the creator. That's the form maker, the mother. That's why she says the age of the our mind is over. Because the final shot is with the supermind. So all this would take ultimately, if our mind is allowed, it will keep allowing different possibilities, million years, billion years, God knows. But supermind brings the imperative. So it pushes, it says, okay, now humanity is prepared enough. At least a section of humanity is prepared by all these different gods, goddesses. Now there is a section of humanity ready for the imperative directive. By imperative means the original will. Before that, our mind takes us through a football match. And you don't know which side are we. Which whoever is kicking the ball, you are on that side. That's the state of humanity. So this is the logic behind it. So overmind seems to add to this perplexity. In overmind, in all the higher ranges of the mind, we find recurring the dichotomy of a pure silent self without features or qualities or relations, self-existent, self-poised, self-efficient, and the mighty dynamis of determinative knowledge power of a creative consciousness and force which precipitates itself into the forms of the universe. This opposition, which is yet a co-location, as if these two were correlatives or complementaries, although apparent contradiction of each other. This is where we see that all through the spiritual history, and it's not that anybody who experiences this witness state has experienced Nirgun Brahma. One has to go deep through that trail. Then you reach, Shubhendu uses a wonderful word, sublimates itself into the coexistence of an impersonal Brahman without qualities, a fundamental divine reality free from all relations of determinates, and a Brahman with infinite qualities, a fundamental divine reality who is the source and container and master of all relations and determinations. Nirguna Sagun. So this is where our mind can lead us. And he reminds us at every level you can experience. You know the story of that when mother was meditating with Tagore in Japan. He said, I can enter into Nirvana. And you know, they both sat together. And she is waiting. Where is Nirvana? she knows. Then she comes down and down and down. She says his consciousness has just come out of the mind and entered into a little peaceful state of witness, and he thought it's Nirvana. So there is a mental Nirvana. There is a vital Nirvana. There is a physical Nirvana. Nirvana is everywhere, that state. Now you see how tricky it can be unless you have a proper Lord to lead us with the hand. So all this one discovers. So on page 327, our mind then gives us no final and positive solution. It is in a supramental cognition beyond it that we are left to seek for an answer. A supramental truth consciousness is at once the self-awareness of the infinite and eternal and a power of self-determination inherent in that self-awareness. The first is its foundation and status. The second is its power of being, the dynamis of self-existence. So it's there that one discovered the reconciliation between absolute silence and absolute power. There's a line in Savitri, force one with unimaginable rest. Another line which, if you sit at the samadhi, that line fits so well. In absolute silence sleeps an absolute power. The Lord is sleeping there, and of course the mother. So in absolute silence sleeps an absolute power. So that's one discovers that in the supermind. They are not seen as separate, not as Purusha and Prakriti and Brahman and Maya. So he says if we pursue this, we'll have time to read. We have read something about supermind, and we'll have more and more. Shobindu will take us hand holding. So we'll not get into it more. This is just to get the gist of things. And then on page 330, he says something very interesting. Six lines from below. The supramental cognition of things, which sees the one truth everywhere and would so arrange its account to us of our existence, its report of the secret of creation and the significance of the universe. Meaning thereby, if you ask the overmind that why am I? He said, no, wrong question. Who am I? So who am I? I don't exist. That's the answer. If you don't exist, the question why am I has no meaning. See, it's a very smart way. Spiritual logic works like that. Why am I here at this point of time? Don't ask all these questions. Or some who want to answer, they'll say karma. Good karma, bad karma. Some karma is the another word, you know. But Sri Aurobindo writes, because he has had the supramental full experience and the realization, he says, the divine fits faultlessly time and circumstance. Faultlessly. You are where you are meant to be. Why? We don't know. That we have to discover. As Ashwapati and Narad. And Narad says, O king, though random seems the way along whose banks your feet have strayed. Looks random. Why am I where I am? Yet, there is a deeper truth. He goes on to say that, you know, there is a meaning in each curve and line. This is the supramental vision. Everything that is there. Of course, I may misspell the meaning. I may say this is something I have to learn. No. That's our, again, human mind projecting on to the divine. There is a journey. And if I am here just now where the train has stopped because of a chain pull, now we don't have all that joy when the chains used to be pulled. I don't know it happens now or not. But there was such a joy. You get down in the middle of nowhere. I used to enjoy. Oh, there is a little field out there. And then the train will hoot and then you rush and jump and get into. But you don't tell your parents all this. But they'll be very nervous. So you know that there is, it is because it has to be like this. Why? That truth supermind has. That's what he's trying to tell us. Everything that is determined. So it is on one side indeterminable. Why? Because by no amount of mental stretching, even the overmind, it cannot know ultimately that mystery. It transcends the cosmos. It transcends the individual. At the same time, it is the last determinate, the final determinate which pushes the cosmos and the individual. Pushes time. It's beyond time. And yet time is its instrument and slave to manifest what it must manifest and in the way it must manifest. So that's why it is said that surrender to the divine and acceptance of all that is happening in our life is something very beautiful and powerful. And if something in us seeks to change things, both can coexist. Supermind putting us in a prison, God forbid. But all the great people somehow have gone through the prison. I don't know. So, but it puts us in a difficult spot. On the other hand, inside, it makes you feel that you must come out of it. Both are the part of the same mysterious play. It's very amazing. That couldn't it have done like this? No. This is how it had to happen. You have to go through that, understand, realize, in freedom choose. This is a way, mental way of expressing it. And it takes us through that journey where we are ready. So he says, if God has put me in hell and holding me down with both his hands, I see no reason why I should strive to come out. But the next aphorism is, if God puts me in hell with one hand and raises me with the other, I must be with the hand that is raising me up. So that's how the supermind explains everything, because it is the indeterminable as well as the ultimate soul determinate. Okay, so we'll come back after 10 minutes and resume the journey of the life divine.